at the end of the day, it truly doesn't matter what it is. Almost any way of eating, I can make healthy. I can ensure that a person's getting all of the vitamins, minerals, fiber, fat, calories, protein that they need. But some are just going to be a little more challenging than others.
Hey, Emily, welcome to the Get in the Mode podcast.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah. We are excited to have you also. You're sort of a unique guest in our podcast, from digital leaders to executive coaches to now a nutritionist. Why don't we start by, for the benefit of our listeners, having a quick intro of yourself. What have you been doing? And in the last 5 years, perhaps, give us your background.
Excellent. Yes. So my name is Emily Zorn. I am a registered dietitian and health coach, and I started my career as a registered dietitian in the sports nutrition world. So I did an internship and my master's at Ohio State, all focused on sports nutrition. And from there, for a few years, I worked with just athletes in the collegiate and professional level. And it was very hands-on. It was very much, you're with the athletes every day. You're at all of their practices, their games, providing the pre and post-workout nutrition, doing consulting, doing education, all of that. It was a very time-consuming but fun and engaging job. And I loved it. But then 2020 hit, and my husband, who also happens to be a sports dietitian, accepted a job out at Stanford in California. So we moved from the Midwest out to Palo Alto, California, 3 years ago. And with that, had to quit my job as a sports dietitian and started up in California. And it was COVID. So everything was shut down. People weren't really hiring new sports dietitians. So I had a decision to make, and I'd always in the back of my head thought, well, maybe it would be fun to try out starting my own business, see what that looks like. But I'd never had the opportunity to try, and that felt like a really good time to do it. So I started my business in May of 2020. And since then, I've just been focusing on learning as much as I can and growing it and helping people to the best of my ability ever since. So it's been about 3 years. And while I still do work with some athletes and have some clients who are runners or are high school football players or are maybe tennis players and they want to gain muscle, lose fat, I also work with people who are non-athletes who just want to clear up the noise around all of the different things we hear about nutrition, come up with a personalized plan so they know their path to health without getting confused about, oh, should I try this diet? My friend is vegan, but my other friend does the keto diet. What's right for me? So I do a fun mix of both of those now, and it's really been fun. It's been quite a journey, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Great. Well, since you mentioned athletes, any famous that we know of, or can you talk about that or no?
Yeah. So on the collegiate side, I did work with some of the football players at Ohio State the year after they won the national championship. So Joe Burrow at the time was, I think, the third string quarterback and then went to LSU years later and now plays in the NFL. So it was fun working with him. And that was just a star-studded team. Joey Bosa was on the team. Ezekiel Elliott was on the team. It was amazing. But then after Ohio State, I worked for the Chicago Cubs minor league, which if anyone knows baseball, there were a few guys who are now in the majors. David Bodie was one who I worked with. But probably the biggest player who I had the opportunity to work with at the time was Chris Bryant, because he came down from the Cubs majors. He was injured. So he came out to Iowa and got to spend a week with us at the Iowa Cubs. So that was fun, a fun experience just to get to know these people. And you realize, yes, they're amazing athletes and everyone knows who they are. But at the end of the day, we're all just people and everyone needs to eat. Everyone needs nutrition. So yeah, it's fun to work with a wide variety of people for sure.
From your practice with non-athletes versus athletes, is there a difference in sort of, obviously there's plenty difference in terms of strategy on what you prescribe, but I'm curious on the receiving side, is there like athletes are more inclined to follow through versus the others? What sort of differences have you observed?
Sure. So in general, I would say athletes have been trained to more or less do as they're told. They've had coaches their whole lives. They've had strength coaches and coaches for their actual sport. And then when you throw a dietitian in the mix, they're used to having someone say, okay, this is what you do. And then they go do it. And even if things get in the way, they're very focused. If this will help me be a better athlete, I will do it. Now, I say that not every athlete is bought into nutrition. Maybe they're fully bought into the strength and conditioning side and fully bought into what their coach is telling them. But it takes a little bit of time for some people to convince them that nutrition is just as important. But in general, athletes are very good. They want it to be clear and say, this is what I should eat and this is what I do. And they go out and do that. But that being said, there are some people in the general public who are also like that. So that's why I like to have different approaches depending on the person I talk to, whether they're an athlete or not. I like to get to know them first and decide and speak with them and ask them, okay, which approach is best for you? Very straightforward and measurements and numbers and all of these, making it very clear and not having much choice. Do you want to go that path? Or do you want to go more of the let's do overarching guidelines and you try things out and see how you feel and more of the intuitive eating side? I would definitely say in general, intuitive eating works with more people of the general public, but I've had athletes who like that. And I've also had people in the general public who want the very specific. So it just depends.
Yeah. From a gender standpoint, are you primarily working with men, women, both?
It depends on the time, but I work with both. Sometimes I have more men than women. Sometimes I have more women than men. But, you know, in general, it's probably a 60-40 women to men split.
Got it. Okay. Let's take a step back and talk a little bit about nutritionists. What's the role? Perhaps what's the value? And listeners of our podcast are mostly executives and leaders, high performance individuals. So for somebody like that, what can a nutritionist offer?
Definitely. Yeah. So I always find it interesting speaking with people who are executives, C-suites, own their business, high-end people, because a lot of times they have similar needs to athletes. While maybe they're sitting more at a desk, they need to be able to use their brain like an athlete does. And nutrition can definitely help with that. So for those types of people, while I probably wouldn't recommend an extremely high calorie and high protein diet that I would for an athlete, we would focus more on the things that could really make sure they're getting all everything that they need, that they are fueled, but focusing on brain health, because that is so important. And also focusing on energy, just having the energy to be able to do all of the things that you need to do in your day. Nutrition and eating the right things at the right time and spreading it out throughout the day can really help with that. So it's beyond just the amount of food that you're supposed to eat throughout the day. It's also, there's a lot we can do with specific types of food. There's anti-inflammatory foods. There's foods that help us focus. There's foods that keep us full for longer. If you know you have a full day of meetings and you can't go out and get lunch, what can you eat that's going to keep you full all day so you can keep going and you don't get that brain fog? So there's a lot to be gained by having a nutritionist or a dietitian. And at the end of the day, I think the most valuable piece is what I was talking about earlier, about just clearing out the noise of, I've heard that intermittent fasting is helpful. Would it be a good opportunity for me? Or if you're interested in trying a different diet, just having a second person, an expert to talk to, and to let, is this a good path to go for you, or should we try something else?
Makes sense. So I love that. It's like your focus for somebody like that would be more on energy levels, quality of mind, improving brain health, and things like that. Now, what are some general practices that one can start with? Like, where can, let's say you're sort of informed, you've heard a lot of things, maybe you are Huberman podcast subscriber, and you're just listening and getting a lot of information from various sources. Where does one start that journey?
Yeah. So where does someone start the journey of improving their nutrition?
Yes. Upping the nutrition game. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it depends on where you are starting from. So like what you just explained, someone who has a lot of the knowledge, I would say it's all about just taking that first step. And this is my personal approach. Some people will go in and ask you everything that you eat and change everything about your diet. My approach is very slow and steady because I want to empower people to be able to continue the things that we've implemented together for the rest of their lives. So that takes a slower and steadier approach. But a few things that I would really recommend that people focus on first and foremost, just because they're the most effective and some of the most easy things to implement. First would be hydration, just because it's free. Water is free. It is so important to be hydrated because it affects every piece of our body. And I'm sure many people who are listening have heard this before, but it is extremely important. So always having your water bottle or a glass of water with you. If you're sweating a lot, it can be really helpful to add in electrolytes. So you could go as simple as just putting some salt in your water, on your food. That's going to help hold the water in your body and help you be more hydrated. So hydration is extremely important. The next thing I would say is if people can add more anti-inflammatory and antioxidant foods to their diet, they're going to feel better immediately. So this can be really simple. The one food that is anti-inflammatory and has antioxidants is berries. So it could be as simple as I want to add 2 servings of berries to my day. I have berries with breakfast and I have berries after dinner for a dessert every day.
Does it matter which berry?
They all have different benefits.
Okay.
For that one, I say whatever one that you enjoy the most. And it's also great to have a variety of food. So if you like all of them, if you like strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, have them all. But yeah, they all have different good qualities and they all have antioxidants, are all anti-inflammatory. So that's really important as well. So those are probably 2 things that right off the bat, whenever I look at someone's diet, I'm really focusing on is the hydration and are they getting a lot of anti-inflammatory, antioxidant foods?
Yeah. Any guideline on the water levels? I try to consume like 50 ounces. I've heard like half of the weight of your body. What's your guideline?
Yeah. So that is the recommendation. It's half of your body weight in pounds. So whatever that is, and that's how many ounces a person is supposed to drink in a day. Now, if you work out, for every hour of working out, hiking, sweating, you want to add another 20 ounces. So it really does add up fast. And some people who are listening, maybe you're doing the mental math and are thinking that is an insane amount of fluid. So it's okay to work your way up there because you don't have to go from drinking 20 ounces a day to drinking 120, right? Your body would not respond well to that. So it's okay to slowly work your way up. But yeah, that's the recommendation.
Yeah. For the ones that also complain about going to having to go to the bathroom when you drink a lot of water, I think Huberman was saying that if you actually sip your water more slowly, chances of your body metabolizing the water is better than just gulping it and then you're having to go to the bathroom. Have you observed that or
yeah.
Is that something you recommend?
Definitely. Slowly drinking your fluid throughout the day is always going to be the way to go. I never recommend if someone gets to the end of the day and they still need to drink 50 ounces of water, don't chug it. Your body doesn't need all of that water all at once. So slowly sipping it throughout the day. And also, if you add electrolytes to your food, to your drinks throughout the day, your body's more likely to hold on to the water and it's less likely to just go right through. So that is also an option.
What's your favorite? Do you use Element or any of those?
Yes, I love Element. That one is intense. There's, for anyone who's ever tried it, it's very high in sodium, lots of potassium, which is great. Unless you have high blood pressure, then you want to avoid that one. But yeah, if I need a big hit of electrolytes, I like having Element. I also really like this brand called Fluid. They have these little tablets that you can add to your water. It's similar to Noon, but they have no sugar in them. It still has the electrolytes. It has potassium and sodium in it, but not as much as Element. So that's more of an everyday one for me. But if I'm going out and I'm sweating a lot, maybe I'm going on a hike, Element would be my go-to.
You got to be careful with some of those that have a lot of sugar in them, right? There are some electrolytes that do have a lot of sugar.
Definitely, like Gatorade, it's full of sugar. But I would recommend that for an athlete or someone who is training for a marathon, right? Someone who actually needs the energy, because there's certain carb recommendations for every hour of exercise you have, this and that. But for the everyday person and for myself, I definitely don't need 50 grams of sugar. Just for the walking and light exercising and occasional running I do, that's not necessary. So for most people, I would recommend an electrolyte that doesn't have any sugar in it. So yeah, Fluid and Element are two really good ones.
That's great. We talked a little bit about brain health. There's a lot of talk on Peter Attia's podcast, Huberman podcast, about gut microbiome. Can we talk about that, what that is, and can we break that down? What are some healthy practices for that?
Definitely. Yeah. So lots of really exciting research coming out about the gut microbiome and how it is connected directly to our brain. And I won't pretend to be an expert in this area. The research, it's just started to come out and it's getting better and better. But in general, yeah, they've just found that our gut bacteria can actually produce different compounds such as serotonin, dopamine, things that make us feel good. And it's directly connected to our brain. So it becomes super important to have a healthy gut, not just for digestion and for feeling good, but also having a healthy gut can ensure that we have a good mood and that cognitive function is as good as it possibly can be. So very exciting. And based on all the research that is coming out, it becomes even more apparent how important it is to take care of our guts. And that is, nutrition is the number one thing that you can do there. So different things that you can do nutritionally is the first is obvious probiotics, which is the healthy gut bacteria that's found in a lot of fermented foods like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut, miso. All of those things have probiotics in it. So trying to get some form of probiotic food every single day. But it also becomes important to have prebiotics, which are certain fibers that feed the probiotics. So garlic, onions, asparagus, there's a lot of different foods that contain a lot of prebiotics. But having both of those, the pro and prebiotics, is extremely important. And then, like I was mentioning earlier with the berries, like having a variety of different foods is also super important to support a healthy gut microbiome. So when people ask, I just like having the same thing for breakfast, lunch, dinner every day, is that fine? Yeah, it's fine. But if you want to optimize your gut microbiome, you want to switch it up. You want to have a bunch of different types of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, lean proteins every day, because that just means that you're going to have more variety in your gut microbiome, which is then going to have that connection with the brain as well.
Anything to watch out in so far as the probiotics, like sugar, perhaps?
Yeah. So
favorite brands.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting point, because where probiotics are extremely healthy for the gut, having too much, a diet that's too high in sugar can actually benefit the negative bacteria growing in your gut microbiome. So that's a good point. One thing I think about immediately is kefir. And I don't know if people listening, if anyone's tried it before, but it's basically like a drinkable yogurt. And I really enjoy it, but I realized I only really enjoy it because there's about 20 grams of added sugar to every cup of it. If you like the taste of the plain one, good for you. Like maybe add it to a smoothie or something so that you'd be getting some good flavor. But that's one that I've recently decided, okay, I'm going to cut back on that and instead eat Greek yogurt. So I'll get unsweetened Greek yogurt. Doesn't matter what kind. There's Faye, there's Chobani, Oikos, whatever kind you like. I just like getting the unsweetened one and adding things to it. So berries for antioxidants, anti-inflammation. Sometimes a little bit of honey. My dad has bees at home.
I was going to say, that's what I do. That's my hack.
Oh.
Adding honey.
Yes, I love honey. And if you can get local honey, right, a lot of times it has the pollen in it in the right amount to where you end up not being as allergic to whatever's floating around in your environment, which is really another benefit. So that's what I would recommend is if you enjoy yogurt, if you can tolerate the dairy, have unsweetened Greek yogurt and add things to it. If you can't do dairy, it gets a little bit harder to get probiotics, but not impossible. There's always kombucha, which again, look for the sugar amount. There are really good ones out there that are fairly low in sugar. But if you like sauerkraut or kimchi, which unfortunately I don't, but if you do, having a little bit of that every day is going to help you get a good probiotic boost as well.
One recently I was at a barbecue and somebody brought alcoholic kombucha.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I think it's counterproductive.
Yes, I think you're right. I've had it and it is delicious, but at the end of the day, I don't really understand its purpose. Because it's good for your gut with the probiotics, but it also has alcohol.
And then the alcohol kills the bacteria.
Right, exactly. So if you're trying to get your probiotics, go for the non-alcoholic kombucha. But yeah, you bring up a good point there. I've always thought that stuff is hilarious, but it does taste good. But you just have to know that you're not doing any favors to your gut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For non-athletes, what are some nutrition metrics that you could potentially track? Is there such a thing? Like just from a fitness standpoint, we have many metrics. What about nutrition?
Definitely. So this is something I'd like to talk to people about in our first session when I'm working with them, because there has to be something that we are tracking throughout so we know that things are getting better. So I'm not big on tracking weight. I would instead enjoy, and people enjoy as well, because it's way less stressful to find other things to track. So big picture things that we'll often track is energy levels, sleep, confidence levels, their confidence in making their food choices. We'll track things like focus. And while none of those have specific numbers like weight do, we use a scale. So a scale of 1 to 10 in the beginning, where are you energy wise? And then check in throughout the program. Okay, is that number going up? Is that number going down? The metrics I like to track, but also when I'm working with someone, I can find it to be very helpful to track the actual efforts. Because if we track the efforts and you can see, these are all the things that I've changed. And then you can attribute, oh, I'm feeling better. I have more focus. I have more energy to all of these efforts that you have tracked. So we'll come up with whatever those are. For some people, it's, I want to add more protein at every single meal. I want to drink this amount of water. I want to have half a plate of vegetables twice a day, whatever it is, tracking those efforts and then seeing the outcomes such as energy, confidence, sleep, focus, as a result of that. So yeah, tracking things can be really helpful and having an Excel sheet with the red and green of I did it this day, I didn't do it this day can help build that confidence as well.
I like that. I wonder, is there any app or anything that like Fitbit that helps track those levels, or you use just an Excel sheet?
So I typically defer to the client and ask, do you have anything that works for you tracking wise? I don't know the name of it, but I do have a client who does use some app where she can put in whatever it is she wants to track in the app. I'll have to ask her what that is and I can get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have other clients who prefer Excel. They like seeing it all right there. And we just have every week and all of the efforts that they want to track. And every single day, they just do red or green, whether or not they did it. So it's nice to look at it after 3 months and see, look at all this green, like all the good things that I did. Oh, okay. I guess it makes sense why I'm feeling better and more focused and things like that. So just depends on the person.
Yeah. Those are interesting metrics. I think that's something that I'm going to look into. I like what you've described, like before that you just talked about. Let's talk a little bit about diet. So there's a lot of different types of diets available. I'm curious what your thought is on those. Does that even make sense for someone to follow a certain diet? Is that a temporary thing? How do you ignore some fads that are out there, fad diets? So yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to things like fad diets, like true fad diets, like cleanses, or even like the Whole 30 diet or things like that are meant to be short term. At the end of the day, people can do whatever they want. Personally, I never encourage someone to do something that they can't continue for at least the next year or so. And that's just because if we get stuck in this cycle of this month, I'm going to do a diet and next month, I'm going to eat whatever I want. And then the next month, I'm going to do a diet. We're just in this diet cycle and we're gaining weight and then we're losing weight. We're gaining it and losing it. And that can really just wreak havoc on our metabolism. So we don't want to do that. Now, as far as other kind of quote unquote diets that are somewhere between a diet and a lifestyle or something that people want to continue for the long term, if they choose to go vegan or if they choose to do intermittent fasting or the paleo diet, Mediterranean diet, whatever that sort of is, I'm open to all of those. And I think each person just needs to figure out which way of eating suits their body best and makes them feel their best. I'm never going to talk to a client and say, you have to start eating vegan now. But I'm also not going to have a client, if a client comes to me and says, I want to eat vegan, I'm not going to say, well, no, you can't. You have to start eating meat. We can work with many different ways of eating to ensure that people are getting what they need. But again, it has to just be a way of eating that a person enjoys, that they can stick with for a long time, and that makes them feel good. So at the end of the day, it truly doesn't matter what it is. Almost any way of eating, I can make healthy. I can ensure that a person's getting all of the vitamins, minerals, fiber, fat, calories, protein that they need. But some are just going to be a little more challenging than others. But when it comes to the fad diets, they're not my favorite. I don't think that they do anyone any good. I think in the short term, maybe the best thing you'll see is some weight loss. Maybe they won't feel as foggy, but if you can't stick with it long term, it's not good for the body.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about Whole 30. Years ago, I did Whole 30. It's an elimination diet, right? So you eliminate a lot of food from your diet, like sugar, alcohol, and you slowly start reintroducing them to see which ones inflame your body, right? Internal. The problem I faced was when I reintroduced, I felt I didn't know which one may be causing inflammation, which one isn't, because you're sequentially introducing it. Now, let's say and plus the inflammation degree to which your body undergoes inflammation is different for different kinds of food too. So I think I realized a lot of things about that and eventually didn't quite work for me as it's designed to work. Is that true? Is that experience sort of accurate when I observe it like that?
Yeah, definitely. So Whole30 is interesting because it is based on a principle that dietitians use all the time with people, which is the elimination diet. I just think it's very hard for a person to do that on their own. And I'm biased because I'm a dietitian, right? But I think when people are left to their own devices, and I've seen the Whole30 diet, I've seen their website, I know there's books, and they tell you what to do, and they say, introduce this, then introduce that. And if you feel okay, introduce this. I think that if a person was doing that with a health professional who was able to help them determine, okay, yes, this is inflammation, or no, this is just your body responding to something. In that case, the elimination diet is very helpful for people, especially who have IBS or any issues like that. But when we are left to our own devices with that, it can be hard to know. Yeah.
I think in my case, it was indeed hard because I was doing it on my own. And even the energy levels suffered a lot because in the first month, you're pretty much eliminating everything, I felt.
Right. So calories are energy. And when we only have a very small list of food with calories that we can eat, it gets hard. So energy is going to suffer. For sure.
Well, Emily, what are some projects that you're working on, excited about?
Yeah, so an ongoing project is a podcast that I do have with my co-host and my friend and fellow dietitian. Her name is Marie. And we've been doing the podcast for a few years now. It's called RDs versus BS. And we come out with a new episode every Monday. And we talk about a lot of the things that we've talked about today in this episode, like the keto diet, intermittent fasting, Whole30, paleo, and each episode is one topic that we dive deep into, look at all the research and determine whether it's legit or BS, whether it's something you should focus on or just ignore and move on with your day. So that's been a really fun ongoing project, a project that is related to the podcast that we're working on is a book, just the RDs versus BS book based on all of our different podcast episodes. We're on about episode 84 just released yesterday. So we've taken all of our podcast episodes and broken them up into different chapters with different topics and made a book that people can use to reference any nutrition question they have. Hopefully it's in this book. And we want to get it out for New Year's of 2024, because that's when everyone is interested in nutrition and can be a fun little New Year's project. So we are working on that as well. No hard date for when we know it's going to be coming out, but hopefully within the next few months.
Very exciting. Every week, a new episode. How do you manage that? That's a lot of research.
We take breaks. We just came off a summer break that was about 2 months. It was the longest break we've had. We take breaks whenever we need to, and it makes it easier when we're researching it together. So
yeah,
we'll have a topic and we'll both put our thoughts on a Google Doc. And she lives in Florida. I live in California. So we don't get to see each other often, but we could still work together and do our research. And it's also many of the things we already know a lot about, and we find it fun to learn more. So it doesn't feel like a lot of work. It's more just a fun project that we get to work on every week.
Great. Well, it's been great having you on the Get in the Mode podcast. Thank you for being a guest.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.